This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
Not just any podcast.
What is it, Rog?
It's our Hanukkah special.
It is our Hanukkah special, as Louis van Gaal would say.
Crap festival, crap podcast, perfect, made
for
each other.
It's also our Kwanzaa special, Rog.
Yep.
And definitely our Christmas special.
It's the last
one
before the new year.
Before the holes and before the new year, Rog. How are you feeling about the new year?
A little blue.
Why?
A little blue.
What's wrong?
I've been immersed in studies.
You have?
Yeah,
A
lot of GFOP sent me,
You do this once a year. You always, at the end of a year, get into studies.
Well, I've been trying to get through them all.
Yep.
And there's two that I've had sent to me by probably a couple of dozen GFOPs. I'm not quite sure why they had me written all over them, David.
Yeah, I didn't get any of these. Okay, study number one.
Some 28%, according to BBC Radio 5.
Yeah.
So it must be true.
Yeah.
Some 28% of all British adults feel lonely, according to a survey.
Uh-huh. Do you feel lonely?
I love being lonely. I think there's a big difference between being alone and feeling unwanted. And I should get to the second study.
Okay, go to the second study. Study number two.
Which is 35% of British adults admit that they sleep with a teddy bear. That's a plush toy in America. To help de-stress and sleep at night.
How many of the 28% who are lonely and the 35% who sleep with the teddy bear are the same people?
Are you saying it might just be the
or
same
these
five
different
guys?
Studies?
They're completely different. The second one was done by a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Travel Lodge.
Yeah.
But what does it tell you? Because I am fascinated by it. I love loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
I also love my big Ted. I've got my big Ted still over here. He's got one eye now.
Yeah.
He's dressed still in a nylon Everton jersey that my mother persuaded me was a true Everton jersey in like 1970. Yeah. She stitched on it in crude sewing, Scouse power, because she didn't quite know what the Everton badge looked like.
Yeah.
So I do have a teddy bear, and I like feeling lonely. It allows me to be with like books and music and football, sweet football, which is a lovely response to all of those things.
But is that loneliness, or is that you just sometimes like being alone?
I love being on my own.
Yeah, you know, but I don't know that that's loneliness. I think you just like being on your own. Other Rog.
Yeah.
Who?
The one that listens to Foreigner, I Want to Know What Love Is.
Yeah, I get along very well with Other Rog. Other Rog, I don't think, likes being alone. Other Rog likes company.
Oh, you should explain what Other Rog is to listeners.
Other Rog is Rog's alter ego who doesn't like it when Rog complains. Other Rog tells him to stop complaining.
Not that one.
I love Other Rog.
Do you still have a soft toy?
No, I don't.
When did you get rid of them?
I mean, a long time ago.
Like, when exactly? Did you just toss them aside, leave them behind, burn them in a manic Devo feeling of just, the future does not belong to you?
I mean, my parents still have this. It's a very, very old teddy bear. I mean, going back to, you know, the beginning of last century, that's always been in our house, but it's been too precious to ever hug or hold.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very, very, very Davis there.
That's fascinating.
But
this is for your comfort, but you cannot touch it.
Yeah, I stopped having a teddy bear, I think, when I was probably 3 or 4 years old. My son George, he likes his teddy bear. He's now got himself a little black dog that he calls Arlo. He likes having his Arlo with him all the time. But, he likes his teddy bears. But I think I got rid of them when I was 3 or 4. I also like being alone sometimes, or have had points in my life where I've liked being alone. But thank God I don't suffer from loneliness.
I think plush toys,
yeah,
being removed from them at the age of 3, far too early. It's very Dickensian.
Too early.
Yeah, you got to separate it from your plush toys too early. I do think the world is separated into two kinds of people.
Yeah. Like red and blue.
The people that leave home and their parents preserve their bedroom, childhood bedroom, as it was for decades.
Yeah.
And the people who leave home and the next day their parents bring in the interior decorators and turn that former bedroom into a gym. Mum's gym, dad's office. I mean, you come home from wherever you are, university or another city where you've moved, and you're like, I'm just going to go in my bedroom. And it's just like mum's stairwalker is in there, and it smells faintly of mum's sweat, and then dad's kind of gas from when he's been working late at night, watching videos on his computer. What kind of videos, Dad? Work, son.
I think you can guess what Trev did to my childhood bedroom as soon as I'd left. How about yours? Is yours perfectly
still
preserved?
Intact.
It is. Oh, my
Shrine, Stars and Stripes.
Shrine. Someone, did you say it's a shrine?
Yeah.
I love it.
Shrine to Rog.
It's a shrine to Rog.
One day I'd love to do a book on childhood, just a book of photographs of people's childhood bedrooms.
It's preserved by, now that they're grown up, preserved by their parents.
Either preserved or
idea.
Just like Jim.
Yeah.
Jim. It's fascinating. Different approaching things from different lives, David. Go on. So last pod before the new year.
Yeah, last pod before the new year. We've got two more episodes of the Men in Blazers show this year. They're evergreen.
Not really that evergreen. We just predicted the future.
Yeah, we're future.
They're going to air on the 22nd and the 29th. They're almost our best of the season so far. Recaps, wouldn't you say,
yeah,
David?
Yeah, they're good. They're good.
We want to thank you. It's been a beautiful year, packed full of wet Herreras, problems in Sector 2.7, Paul Carr blows your mind and moves to Tweed. We've loved every single second. We're about to turn the page on 2040.
Yeah, new year, Rog. 2015.
Do you get excited about these things?
Well, yes. I mean, I like the blank page. I love the blank slate of a new year. At the same time, I get a little freaked out when you've got to have a new year and it's such a big number. 2015, I mean, that was the future. That was like rocket pack, Jetson stuff for me, 2015, when I was a kid. I was watching Back to the Future the other day. And at the end of Back to the Future, they go back to the future at the end of the movie, I think to 2015. And it's like the world is operating on a different point of consciousness. And clearly, cars fly. The DeLorean flies in 2015. So 2015, you know, where we actually are in the world, it's a little bit disappointing to me.
But you can still make changes, tiny personal changes.
Yes, well, your resolutions, Rog. You can make resolutions.
I would bet you are the kind of man who makes resolutions.
Not really. I mean, I always think that it's a somewhat arbitrary time of year to go and decide to do it. And it's also very hard. There are lots of resolutions are very difficult. Like people who want to exercise and work out a lot, like January and February, especially on the East Coast, Northeast, Rog, very difficult to get very healthy because you can barely go outside in our polar Arctic weather.
I like to grow whale blubber in those months.
Yeah. I also am still somewhat traumatized. A few years ago, I'm not mentioning any names, but a friend of mine had a dinner party at my house when we went around the table and people were saying their New Year's resolutions, and everybody had really like quite earnest, quite serious, wanted to do more for charity. They wanted to maybe make a change in, you know, their own health. They wanted to do more for others, like whatever it was, you know, really work on their career. One of my mates declared that his New Year's resolution was to read more magazines. And at the point that he said it, I remember looking.
That was his single resolution.
Yeah, he's going
to
read
next
more magazines.
Job, I'd like to
read more magazines.
More magazines.
And at that point, and I can still see it, I looked at his wife and I looked at the look on her face. And I just knew absolutely, as I looked at her face, that they would not be married by the time that it came to New Year's resolutions next year.
That was true.
And they were not. They were not quite, not quite going down the same path. Both absolutely wonderful people.
What are your resolutions, David?
Well, if I had to make resolutions, I mean, I've got some Men in Blazers resolutions.
My resolutions and my Men in Blazers, they're seamless.
The Men in Blazers resolutions and your resolutions are exactly the same thing. Well, my main Men in Blazers resolution is, you know, some people understand this, is that I spend a lot of time looking away, and it's not because I'm looking at myself in a monitor. It's because I have to hit the clips that play on our show. And this is my natural instinct as a producer, is I hit the clip and I check that it's rolling correctly. But it means I'm constantly not looking in the camera. I made a real effort yesterday, Rogers, before the new year, to look directly in the camera every single time. I thought I'd absolutely nailed it. I went back and watched the show last night. I'm still looking in the monitor every time. I've got to look right in the camera, right down the lens, Rog.
I get a lot of tweets telling me to look away.
No, I've got to look. Preferably look. Dave's got to look right down the lens.
America doesn't have to look at it. That's one resolution along the lines of read more magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
No, my second one, I really want to work, and you'll like this, because sometimes I know this annoys you a little about me. I've got to work on my punctuality. I'm not going to be late anymore. I invent 1,000 reasons why I'm going to be late. I have to not be late anymore. I want to be on time for everything. That's my biggest resolution.
Okay. I love that one, David.
I thought you would. I thought you'd like it.
I would like to stop deriving pleasure from Liverpool's losses. Stop being that kind of person.
Yeah,
really, if there's only one change, that would be, I hate that about myself. I'd like to watch more Bundesliga football in 2015.
Really?
Yeah. See the future of the US team.
Okay,
morphing,
I got
jeweling
you.
Before my eyes.
Understood.
I'd like to read more Thomas Hardy.
Oh.
I made a vow to myself that I would read one Thomas Hardy book a year.
Oh, I love The Mayor of Casterbridge.
Oh, it's one of my favourite books. Tess of the D'Urbervilles is like my autobiography.
Yeah.
Don't know why. I can't write an autobiography because it's already been written.
Yeah.
When she cuts off her eyebrows so men wouldn't find her attractive anymore. God, mm-hmm. that breaks my heart. I got 2 years with that resolution and I stopped. So I'm 7 years in arrears.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to work my hardest to cover the Women's World Cup with the passion I feel welling up inside me.
Yeah.
I really want to hit that hard. I'd like to do more live gigs in more cities across America with you.
Are these actually resolutions, though? Many of these are just plans. And there is a difference between a resolution and a plan.
I don't know, Dave. 12-year-old me decided I was going to masturbate 3 times a day.
Was that a resolution or a plan?
I didn't stop to ask myself the question, but I got very stressed when I got the flu on January the 11th and I fell behind. February, by the way, when we're talking about shows, February the 5th in New York, tickets go on sale Wednesday.
How's that? Okay, whatever, go ahead.
We're good to, the tickets are available at www.highlineballroom.com. We're playing the Highline Ballroom.
Oh, we are? Yeah. Wow.
So it's going to be a Golden Jacket presentation.
Oh, it
February
is.
The 5th. It's going to be
that's
beautiful.
Exciting.
Deeply emotional. Bob
For the
Lee.
Second ever recipient of the Golden Blazer.
We're hoping Bob Lee will be on hand to present, like in the Masters.
Like at the Butler Cabin.
Yeah, it'll be,
I love it.
It'll be, all we can promise, it'll be the most emotional Blazer presentation in sports that does not take place in a cabin.
There will be less fake wood panelling than in the Butler Cabin, Rog.
It'll be a little classier. Go on.
Got a packed show, Rog. We're going to break down all of the big storylines in the Premier League, including Manchester United's shaming of Liverpool, Rog, an art which gave you no pleasure whatsoever, or will give you no pleasure, that sort of a thing in 2015. We're going to look at Arsenal's return to potency as well. We're going to try and pretend the Champions League draw is not fixed. It's a little bit fixy. As we look at the round of 16 matchups, we're going to announce the winners of our EA Sports Landon Donovan custom Xbox competition.
So many great entries.
And we're going to welcome Vice President of BuzzFeed Motion Pictures, Jonathan Perlman. Big Arsenal fan, by the way.
He
to the
can
pod.
See the future.
Future, future, future. Okay, to the football, Rog. Oh, time to crack open the Guinness. Good lunchtime Guinness. Lexi, we can't spill any because, actually, you know, it would be typical if we don't spill any today. Lexi, when she listens to this pod, producer Lexi, has gone to Paris for about 10 days, Rog. And so she'll be very upset if we do this so cleanly. She gets so annoyed when we spill it, and she's here and has to help clean it up.
Happy Hanukkah,
Rog. Merry Crimble, one and all.
Can we also thank Thomas Keller?
Yes, let's find. What did Thomas Keller? GFOP Thomas Keller.
In honour of Hanukkah, he sent us some Bouche de Noël.
Wow.
I've just had a chocolate caramel one.
You did?
Yeah, it's all stuck in my corduroy of my blazer now.
And I've got a coffee hazelnut one over here. I'm going to have a little bit of that. Brilliant. Thanks so much, Thomas. We really appreciate that amazing, amazing pastries. Okay, 16/38 of the way through the season, Rog. I don't need to tell you that reduces to 8/19. By the way, by the time we get through the Christmas period, we're going to be 10/19 of the way through the Premier League season. That's more than half, Rog. The table is starting to take on a familiar hue as the romantic teams are feeling the grind and the more moneyed powers' grip is tightened. First of all, Man United 3, Liverpool 0. United thump their northern neighbour. They extend Louis van Gaal's winning streak to 6. Wayne Rooney and Juan Mata put United up 2-0 at halftime before Robin van Persie kills the game off in the 71st minute, Rog. Despite a potent offensive performance, United goalkeeper, former Stray Cat David De Gea, received most of the post-match plaudits.
Oh, David, first of all, I should say, these two teams, they proper hate each other.
Yeah.
I grew up in Liverpool.
Yeah.
Manchester is a half an hour train ride away. Mm-hmm. And you always knew you were about halfway home when the graffiti by the side of the track changed from Scousers Die as you pulled out of Manchester to Mank Bastards as you near the warm caress of home. You know, Gary Neville's famous for saying, I can't stand Liverpool. I can't stand the people. I can't stand anything to do with them. And he really, really means it. This is not World Wrestling smack talk. But this is normally a throbbing, merciless encounter.
Yeah.
It feels just lesser, David. It's although, incredibly
I must
lesser.
Say, you made a point to me, because we were looking at the tunnel footage, because we love tunnel and we get it every week, is we're looking at the two teams in the tunnel. And Rooney and Gerrard, England teammates, players who've got on, by all accounts, pretty well with each other on international duty, not even a glance at each other's direction in the tunnel.
Yep.
Because they'd be savaged by the fans if they did that.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, part of it is just Liverpool. I mean, they just have become a massive case study of how quickly life can flip. One minute you're pulsating, the next you're dejected. I mean, this team have let themselves go faster than Val Kilmer, Davo. Brendan Rodgers, how must it feel? Last year he was Premier League Manager of the Year. He was within fingertips of a Premier League title. Liverpool were the miracle team. And 8 months later, he's a parody of a parody. His team are like a piece of flapping skin. The bookies have him down to be sacked. He's making these kind of wholesale changes before such a massive game. Lovren and Gerrard are brawling in the locker room, reportedly. Raheem Sterling is wanting a bigger contract. He's preferred as a false nine.
Negotiations stalled, apparently.
Yeah, Lambert out. Sterling is a false nine. Simon Mignolet dropped to the bench in a shock. And Brad Jones, his first start since March 2013, at Tom Eldon, tweeted us to say, Brad Jones against Manchester United. Is this the coaching equivalent of pouring cement down the toilet before being evicted?
I mean, look, we should say in Brendan Rodgers' defence here and in Liverpool's defence, obviously the loss of Luis Suarez, a massive loss, although many Liverpool fans felt that they were going to be fine without him. The injury to Daniel Sturridge, I think, has also been just key for this team. But there seems to be a lot more going on as well.
Wheels within wheels.
Wheels within wheels. Much, much more ponderous in their play. You know, less that sort of turning upfield and immediately moving forward, driving forward, driving forward, driving forward, which was the hallmark of the team in the 13-14 season.
Yeah, I mean, the early iteration, Rodgers was all about possession, possession, possession. We lost the game, we won the possession stat. Then they moved to this counter-attacking team. Now it's not clear what they are. I mean, United, they rub salt into that wound before kickoff. They unfurled a 24 years and counting banner mocking Liverpool for when they last won the league. But Liverpool, it has to say, they open with the hunger of a manic labradoodle let off its leash in the park. They attack this shaky Manchester United back three. I have to say, I derived incalculable joy early on watching Marouane Fellaini, not just his move to Ginge, but watching him trying to track Raheem Sterling was like glimpsing an old black bear chase down a red-fronted gazelle. But that game, Davo, in the 12th minute, Liverpool, was that the greatest Arsenal impersonation you've seen in a football game this season?
This was as Arsenal as it gets. Arsenal never look more likely to concede than when they are on the edge of the opponent's area. And that's exactly what happened here. You know, Sterling, it looked like a clear goal-scoring opportunity. I thought he was going to make it, Rog.
Yeah, and then it was De Gea, first of many massive saves. When the camera zoomed in on him, he had a look of relieved contempt on his face, the Spanish goalkeeper. And then the Arsenal rules went into full effect. Valencia got the ball on the wing. He was surrounded by three Liverpool defenders. He went all Harry Houdini.
I mean, it was a very, very soft goal. Rooney joints it in. Brad Jones makes a valiant dive to his right, Rog.
Yeah, a few goalkeepers specialise better in completely diving the wrong way.
I know. I used to do that in primary school all
like
the time.
It's like me playing my kids on FIFA.
Yeah.
I know he has his detractors, but no one can knock Brendan Rodgers as far as I'm concerned. He is a comedy genius. Putting Brad Jones in was just a... just a masterstroke of British comedy.
Yeah.
Rooney, ninth goal in his last home games for Manchester United. The United fans have been chanting up to that point, feed the Scousers, mocking all Liverpudlians. And then as soon as Rooney scored, Rooney, 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 they screamed. He's possibly the greatest and biggest Scouser of them all. I read a great interview of Hugo Borst, the Dutch author of the Van Gaal bio. Oh, Louis! Which has just come out. It was very revealing about Van Gaal and his relationship with Rooney. Van Gaal's father passed away when he was 11. And so much of what he does, so much of how he is, according to Hugo Borst, is about trying to compensate for the loss of a father. And he very much connects to deeply wounded football players. And Hugo Borst says Van Gaal likes Rooney because he sees him as a man who's struggling with something sometimes and he wants to help, he wants to heal, which deeply affects Rooney. And I think you could say it's brought out the best in
wow.
it.
Wow, I mean,
it's
Rooney,
all about our fathers, David.
Rooney is not only playing great football, Rog, and he's really the engine You know, it's that great link up forward again. The man who is linking the midfield to the front line. He's moving brilliantly. He's scoring goals. He's assisting. He's even passing to Robin van Persie, Rog, which is remarkable. But it's also how good he looks. I mean, one has to actually ask yourself, is this actually Wayne Rooney at this point, Rog? He looks, I mean, not only his hair looks good, his chin looks chiseled.
He's got
a ruddy complexion. He looks cut. He looks happy.
He's got some of Meg Ryan's discarded parts, I think, fixed to his body in various ways.
He looks gorgeous.
Liverpool tried to enforce their ideas on the game. Their confidence was just brittle in the final third. Each of the teams like an NFL team who just had to punt on every possession. And I just kept telling myself in the first half, is this really the best league in the world? Yes, this is the best league in the world. I kept repeating to myself. And then United's second goal before half-time kind of validated that.
I mean, not questionably offside. Clearly, clearly offside. We referred to it as David Copperfield stuff last night. A tremendous illusion. And Mata with the header, Rog. Not a man who you often think is going to score against you with
5'7". Watching him head home, it was like seeing Spud Webb dunking. This is a weekend of Smalls dominating air like little Spitfires. Mata scored 5 goals, Davo, off 6 shots. He is an economical little man. But Liverpool went in at half-time knowing they'd been screwed on the second goal.
Yeah.
And also knowing if Sterling had taken one of his chances, the texture of the game would have been so different. But I guess that's football, Davo.
Yeah, it is football. The point is to get the ball, is to avoid the goalkeeper, Rog, to get it in the back of the net between the posts and the crossbar.
More of the same in the second half. Lallana off, Balotelli on. The cavalry is coming, if that's true. It was the worst rescue attempt since Dick Halloran in The Shining. Sterling it was that kept United in the game. It was like watching Chris Wondolowski on repeat over and over and over again. I mean, his third classic miss was less a great save by De Gea when he was completely through. More a symbol of how much this young English starlet, his confidence just seems to have drained out of him, Dave. And few pay rise demands could be worse timed.
Yeah, he may well be watching too much of Mario Balotelli in training. I mean, Mario Balotelli is getting worse, Rog. That's the amazing thing. It reminds me, you referred to the cavalry earlier. Yesterday, I looked up the Italian cavalry, the Savoia Cavalera. You know, they were the last major cavalry charge in military history. It was in 1942 when 600 Italian cavalrymen, when they were still part of the Axis, sabres in the air, Rog, they charged 2,000 Russian soldiers in their machine gun positions.
On horseback.
Oh. And they scream, Savoia! As they go.
Must look like one of those
forward
hunting shows on NBC.
On NBC Sports, yeah. Babe Winkleman.
That can be, he's an incredible military
1942,
mind.
Though.
That's the agony for Liverpool fans, David. Yeah. The vinegar in the wound was that they created chances.
Yeah.
I mean, they were 2-0 down, but they knew they could have been 3-2 up.
Yeah.
At Dogfish, Bradford tweeted us to say, almost only counts in horseshoes, hand grenades, and Rooney and Shamak hair coverage. It was an odd game, Dave. It ended up being 3-0. A dominant victory. But David De Gea is the gentleman on the Man United team who's the one you can marvel at. 9 saves, many magnificent, totally, totally shields up.
Yeah, very, very true. Yes, a 3-0 win for United. Still questions about them. But you have to say, winning breeds a lot of confidence in the Premier League. They're now sitting there third in the table, Rog. Just 5 points out of second place. 3 points ahead of West Ham in fourth. You know, looking quite good.
Yeah, looking quite good. But at the same time, their defence is absolutely brittle. Their midfield needs bolstering. The big question is, are United in the title race? For me, David, this game was a case of United kind of crap, Liverpool crapper. Dejan Lovren, crappest. Optimists will say Sir Alex always paced his team to click late November and they'd surge as others lags. Maybe muscle memory will kick in. But for me, this has been one of the most unimpressive 6-game winning streaks. And I know how ridiculous that sounds, an unimpressive 6-game winning streak. In truth, they've had one kind of cohesive 90 minutes, which was the 3-0 win over a rather hapless Hull. But at the same time, their next 7 games are very winnable. And more than any other team, who they bring in the January transfer window, they're talking about a central defender and a dominant world-class midfielder. It could be transformative.
Very, very true. So where do Liverpool go from here, Rog?
Well, you could ask, as at Timmy the Smith said, in that match, if you swap the goalies, would the outcome have been different?
Ha.
Oh my, De Gea.
Yeah.
Possibly. I have to say, I do feel for Liverpool fans. I really do. Everton under David Moyes struggled gloriously to get into the Champions League in 2005. the joy I experienced when they qualified is up there with childbirth and bar mitzvahs. Everton had one game and then were done in the Champions League, and we were out and we never got back. It felt like entering a casino with a huge amount of money, just burning a hole in your pocket and then leaving same casino a couple of hours later through the exit door with nothing. Going back out into the cold, harsh reality of the Vegas street. I mean, Liverpool are unlikely to get back in the Champions League anytime soon. Sterling's contract unsigned. The team feel leaderless. And I feel terrible for Liverpool fans for whom last season just feels like a dream that maybe never really happened.
Another game, another team who've disappointed so far this season, trying to get back on track, Rog. Arsenal, they beat Newcastle 4-1. Newcastle back down to earth after beating Chelsea last weekend, Rog. A five-goal affair between two teams with their eyes, both of them on the fourth-place trophy. Olivier Giroud and Santi Cazorla each put two past young Newcastle keeper Jack Anik. Arsene Wenger's men are now within 2 points of the top four, Rog.
Oh, troubling game for those Arsenal fans who spent the week making angry anti-Arsene banners. How disappointed will they feel? Probably a little confused by the comprehensive nature of this win, David.
Uh-huh.
This nipple versus nipple derby.
Yeah,
90 minutes of
shirts.
Chafed areolas.
Yeah.
I have to say Puma,
yeah,
who make those.
Mm-hmm.
Well done, Puma.
Yeah.
What an amazing move today. They announced their new creative director.
Who is it?
Rihanna.
Oh, excellent. Good job.
Expect more nipples, David.
Yeah.
Expect tighter shirts. Expect more prominent nipplage.
Uh-huh.
The game was all about hair.
Yeah.
It really was. You got Colaccini.
Yeah.
At Karina B said, I love watching Colaccini. As someone with curly hair, I wonder if people ask to touch his hair all the time too.
Yeah, I must say, in the battle of the sort of mop heads there, Rog, I mean, Colaccini, he's taken Fellaini now that Fellaini's gone ginger. Just not the same quality of hair as Colaccini.
I used to have curly hair.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
You had fantastic curly hair.
I was once on one of the happiest summers of my life. I took the Amtrak train right across this great country.
Yeah.
And somewhere outside of Ogden, Utah, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm,
and there was a little Mormon girl just running her hands through my curls.
Wow. That's amazing.
Why do people feel they have permission to run your hands
did
through
you? Did you dream that, or did it
really
happen?
No, it really, really happened.
Wow.
I've still got her address. Lives outside of Ogden. She's a very nice girl.
Yeah.
But I wondered about Jack Colback.
Yeah.
Like this, one of our listeners feels like a curly hair connection to Colaccini.
Yeah.
Do you think gingers feel a special kinship when they watch him play?
Yeah, maybe. They're always looking for the work of gingers.
I do with Marouane Chamakh,
yeah,
and Wayne Rooney,
yeah,
fellow Baldies.
Yeah, look at the Baldies, without a doubt.
Who would win if an all-gingy 11, Sidwell, Alexi Lalas and co,
yeah,
played an all-Jewish 11? Two of the most damaged athletic groupings.
Is Carl Beckerman Jewish or not in this scenario?
Probably need him.
Yeah,
you might need Edgar David.
So we'll take Jewish people and people with somewhat Jewish sounding names.
Yeah, in the most malign minorities clash of the season,
yeah,
Jewish people against gingers.
I think they'd stand a chance with Beckerman in midfield. You've got to think they're gonna win it. Also had the we had the Mohawks, Sammy Amiobi and Debussy, Roger, dueling Mohawks.
Yeah, there's only one winner there.
Yeah.
Sammy Amiobi, he's so furry and beautiful as opposed to the septic kind of feral look. He's an incredible looking bloke, Matthew Debussy. He makes Martin Skrtel look handsome, which is very, very hard to do. The player who won this game without scoring, Sanchez, he doesn't run, he scurries.
Yeah.
And when he scurries, panic ensues.
Yeah.
The crosses he put towards Giroud seemed only designed to do one thing, which was to coax the best out of Arlo White and to make Arlo go into his anals.
The hanging centre is a good one. The header comes in. It's the opening goal. Olivier Giroud. Alexis with a teasing centre. And the meaty French forehead of Olivier Giroud met it and sent it into the corner.
Meaty French forehead.
Oh, that is just a track from Arlo White's greatest hits.
Yeah, it's a very good one.
That actually sounds like a band I was in high school.
Yeah, meaty French forehead.
One that I dreamed would one day tour the world with a flock of seagulls.
Yeah.
If Giroud's head was made of meat, what meat would it actually be, David?
Oh, well, poor.
Contrefilet of horse meat or pot a feu?
They do eat charcuterie in France. They have been known to eat a little horse meat. I think it's some form of jambon, Roger, a form of ham.
If I was Giroud's agent, I would be literally leaving the football side of business to one side.
Yeah.
Doing some kind of co-branding deal with
Boar's Head, Roger, getting on the phone with them.
Be amazing.
Yeah.
I tell you what wasn't amazing, Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Arsenal had this makeshift back four with the rancid Debussy at centre-back alongside the gentlemanly but immobile per Mertesacker. But somehow Newcastle's plan seemed to be, let's concede three goals and then try and test Arsenal through set pieces and corners. Arsenal, they had their chances. They did lack a clinical edge. No Ramsey, no Wilshere, no Ozil, no Walcott will do that to any team. I love Belhan. He's my favourite player. I love watching him run up and down that flank, mostly because he's got beautifully high cheekbones. I adore that gentleman. Giroud, meaty French left foot. What a goal. He's now got a goal every 74 minutes as opposed to Danny Welbeck's every 393. I do feel for Danny Welbeck, Davey.
Yeah.
They disallowed one of his goals and then they should have given him a chance to miss that penalty that Cazorla ultimately took. Let Danny get up and miss it.
Yeah, they have some cheek in that penalty from Cazorla.
Oh, it's a Rush. Bastard move.
Yeah.
It was a bastard move. It was so cruel. Tantamount to child abuse.
Yeah, having already scored three goals on young keeper Jack Anik, to go and Panenka him at that point, it was a little cruel.
Blow it past the crap goalkeeper like a man, Santi Cazorla. I've got to say, if it was an NHL game, Alan Pardew would have seen that penalty, and what would he have done?
Oh, he would have gone insane. He would have immediately sort of crashed out and gone and taken on Arsene Wenger. He would have clocked him. It would have been more than a tie flip, Rog, from Alan Pardew.
He would have tapped Tony Twist.
This is a man with a temper.
He would have tapped Tony Twist on the bench, on the shoulder, sent him on, told him to punch Santi Cazorla right in the orbital socket.
Oh, no, I was thinking Pardew would have just taken Wenger out. He doesn't go through intermediaries. He does the business himself.
Ah, it was just time for one last highlight, possibly my favourite moment of the weekend. Mm-hmm. The substitute of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain for Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Mm-hmm. At Dean Tracy tweeted this and said, when Maitland-Niles came on for Oxlade-Chamberlain, mm-hmm. my TV suddenly reeked of fox hunting, yeah. dogs and very old Scotch. The end
very
of the game,
Downton Abbey, Rog.
The end of the game, Ted McCarthy tweeted this to say, it's so hard to keep up. So is it now Wenger in? And Pardew out. Everything is so confusing in this league, Davo. Sackpardew.com, back again.
Yeah, it's very, very confusing. We actually had a Newcastle fan in the panic room yesterday. Sting dropped by. He was a guest on Watch What Happens Live, which also shoots here at the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Soho. He stopped by the panic room, talked to us about Newcastle. He's behind Alan Pardew solidly.
Oh, he loved
him. Huge Newcastle fan.
Yeah, we told him how much we loved his album, Regatta the Blank.
Yeah. And Landos de Moore.
And then we realised that they're both album names that are exactly the same kind of names that Newcastle are probably scouting to try and buy in January.
Talented French left-back, Regatta de Blanc.
There's only one Arsene Wenger, sang the Arsenal faithful. Poor old Arsenal. It's like doing the hokey pokey, knowing whether you want him in, you want him out. Even Chris, when they shook hands at the end, those two guys, Pardew yeah. and Wenger, Davo. Even Chrissy Hynde and the Pretenders don't know how much there's a thin line between love and hate. Those two men, old Arsene Wenger and Sack Pardew, know it better than anybody.
It is going to be an amazing battle for fourth place in the Premier League this season, Rog. It's just it will feel like a trophy if Arsenal finish fourth. It's going to be a great, great battle. In other Arsenal news, Rog, the club's all-time leading goalscorer, Thierry Henry, announced his retirement from football just this very morning. Henry left New York Red Bulls early this month. When asked about a possible return to North London, he told Sky Sports, "You kind of never leave Arsenal. How many comebacks do you make? At point, it will turn out to be a bad movie. We all love the first Rocky, but I'm not too sure about the last one." Actually, I thought all the Rockies were amazing.
Fabulous.
All amazing.
Yeah, get back, Thierry.
Yeah. That's him saying that, because he can come back and go, what do you mean? Like, the final Rocky was fantastic. And then he can come back. It's cover for him to come back.
What a man, though, David. What an intelligent, charismatic player he was. Yeah. I've got to say, the greatest testament I can think to Thierry Henry is that there's not too many Frenchmen that they've built statues of in England.
Uh-huh.
I've just actually received a new book, The Invincible.
Yeah.
Amy Lawrence, who I love, her story of Arsenal's unbeaten season. And reading it, it's a fabulous book. And reading it, it reminded me of watching him in 2003-04. Thierry Henry. It was to see a footballing bird of prey soar higher than all those around him, reinforced by a sense that he truly loved that club and its history and its fans and its old stadium Highbury, and to watch him respond with an athletic peerlessness which was matched only by his creativity, cheekiness, God he was audacious, and his hunger to score goals and to win. We should say, on note of retirement, congratulations to DeMarcus Beasley, who's retired to the US men's national team. He's a magical bloke to be around, and also the last surviving member of that 1950 team that beat England 1-0. He's played for a long time and he deserves a rest.
Can I just say on Thierry Henry, before we all get too excited about, you know, potential, how great young strikers can be and how they're going to be amazing. Thierry Henry, in his career at Monaco, Juventus, Arsenal, Barcelona, New York Red Bulls, of course, the French national team, scored 411 goals, Rog, in 917 games. It's almost half a goal a game. I mean, phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal stuff, Rog. 1994 to 2014, played for 20 years as a professional. What a career. Okay, Rog, talking of professional, but not necessarily that inspiring. Chelsea 2, Hull 0. Chelsea rebound from last week's loss to Newcastle, comfortably beating hapless Hull at Stamford Bridge. An Eden Hazard header. Rog, let me repeat that. An Eden Hazard header and a tidy Diego Costa goal. Keep Mourinho's men 3 points clear at the top of the table. But in truth, this was not a very impressive performance.
I mean, has a game ever had 2-0 written all over it before a ball was kicked?
Yeah, it's a little fixy.
Hull had visited Stamford Bridge 20 times and never won before. Chelsea, they love to take 2-0 leads this season and then just shut the burners off.
Sort of, though it seemed that the other thing they specialise in is taking one-goal leads and really, really struggling to score a second. And it wasn't until the second half that they were able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say that first goal, Oscar whipping in the ball from the left.
Yeah.
It's become one of Chelsea's signature moves this season.
Yeah.
The only thing that was not signature was Eden Hazard, all 5'8" of him on the end of it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe my eyes.
Yeah.
How did Hazard have the strength to get his buttocks up like that?
I don't. You've got to have phenomenal springs. You need great calf
incredible
muscles
power in his
to get those buttocks up in the air.
It was the closest thing I think we'll ever get to see a dodo fly.
Yeah, very true.
But then Chelsea did what they do. They just laboured. Season as a campaign, etc. Rationing, preserving magic, all of that kind of thing. Hull actually had plenty of the ball, but didn't really know what to do with it. Their growing confidence was like a bright torch pointed at a universal true sign that Diego Costa would soon score. And score he did. It was a beautiful, cohesive moment of team play, Davey. Hazard stepping up, combining with Ivanovic to set up Costa. The only question is why they don't do it more often. It's like they do it when they want.
Yeah, they do it when they decide to go and do it. I got to tell you, my niggly little feeling about Chelsea this season is I feel that they need, over this Christmas period and going into the second half of the season, they need another player to emerge and step up. Yes, they're getting great performances from Matic. They're getting some great performances, obviously, from Hazard, from Oscar and Diego Costa. But it feels like you need another one of your players, maybe a Shirley, maybe one of your defenders scoring more goals. You just need someone else to step up on that team. They're still in four competitions, Rog. They've got so much football that's going to happen to them over the next 2 months. They need another player to step up.
I think they need better signs. I'm always confused by the signs they show at Stamford Bridge when Diego Costa scores. Mostly because the punctuation is absent. They've got that one, I go into battle, come with me. And I'm never sure whether it's meant to be a confidence statement.
Yeah.
I go into battle, come with me.
Yeah.
Whether it's kind of like an order. I go into battle, you come with me.
I think it's more a
question. Oh, it's a question and fearful. I go into battle, you?
You come with me?
Come with me.
You come with me?
I need you. Toilet.
Yeah. I also have no doubt this is something that Diego Costa has never actually said himself.
Yeah.
This doesn't, when you hear a Diego Costa press conference or interview, this is not the sort of thing that Diego Costa says.
That's the other one. Diego Costa, Diego Costa. That's a Costa. Yeah. That's a great name, actually.
Diego Costa.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. That would bring Kev back into our life. Starring Diego Costa. Diego Costa, the governor. The governor. Do you think...
Gov, apostrophe.
No. Yeah, which is like an old London gangland.
He doesn't even know
kind
that
of
governor.
Like, for the guy who's really governor. In charge on the manor.
Yeah, the governor of his manor.
Yeah, and it's all further undermined by the picture that they've drawn of him underneath the governor.
Yeah.
His nickname is actually the proctologist, the one that he's trying to trademark. Uh-huh. It says the governor. And underneath there's an image of Costa. Heartbreakingly sad image.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the Premier League's most lethal scorer look like Eeyore. Super creepy Eeyore.
Uh-huh.
Get on with it, Chelsea signs. 9 Premier League games without a win for Hull. They didn't actually muster a shot on goal for this one. I've got a suggestion for the Hull branding team. I know want to be the Hull Tigers because they think that that will get them
tigers,
popular.
Tigers.
I think they should rename themselves Hullatosis. There's an estimated 60 million people in the US with chronic halitosis.
Yeah.
And they'll all connect to this unbelievable team in that unbelievable outfit who play crap football. They've not won one of their past 8 Premier League games. Hullatosis.
interesting, Rog.
It's not as interesting as the Crucible for Chelsea. They've got six matches in the next, is it 13 days?
Yeah.
Mourinho says he's going to rest his senior players.
Uh-huh.
I don't think one player will play all of these six matches. We will see. I love the survey they did in London.
Uh-huh.
In a shopping centre called Brent Cross.
Yes.
Have you ever been there?
No, never. I've heard of it.
It's truly repulsive. It's like the 1970s. Time has stood still, but it's packed in North London. Mm-hmm. They asked 1,000 children in this shopping mall, who is Jesus Christ?
Uh-huh.
20% of the answers were, he's a Chelsea player.
That's either uplifting or just really depressing, and most likely really depressing.
That's why grown men still sleep with teddy bears in England. It's bloody depression. I got to say, I was in Southampton, as you know, because I bored you with stories about it. But one thing I forgot to tell you was I did a shoot all morning where I was describing Southampton to American viewers. I was like, the Titanic left from here. I was like, Benny Hill was born here. And then I said Jane Austen lived here.
Yeah.
And I had five people in the camera team. And one of them came up to me afterwards and said, we're all trying to work out who Jane Austen is.
Jane Austen. Was she in Bananarama?
No, they thought that it was Charlie Austen, the QPR striker's sister. Why are you talking about Charlie Austen's sister?
Jane? You don't know her. What are you talking
Why
about?
Why are you? Americans don't know Charlie Austen's sister, Jane.
Yeah.
That's truly depressing, David. Jesus Christ is not a Chelsea player. They're mixing him up with Judah the Maccabee.
I got you.
Happy Hanukkah, David.
Oh, Rog, happy Hanukkah. In talking of depressing, Rog, Leicester City 0, Manchester City 1. Frank Lampard's 175th career Premier League goal. Gee, Thierry Henry's record really puts that in perspective. Keeps City on pace with his former side. Meanwhile, Leicester continues to do their best Philadelphia 76ers impression, Rog. They've not won in 11 games.
Fifth straight slovenly win by Manchester City. This is a weekend of 3 points without really impressing. Mm-hmm. But you look at City and no Aguero, no Jovetic, then Dzeko limping out in during warm-ups. Enter number 78, the sackmaster, Jose Angel Pozzo.
Yeah.
Millions of Manchester City's dollars, and it's left to an 18-year-old rookie to lead the line on his own. It's not even his greatest skill. I mean, I don't type this often, but thank God for Samir Nasri.
That might never have been written.
He's playing unbelievably well and somewhat carrying them. But this game ultimately, again, is it the 87th week on the run when we've been coming Manchester City? When the game ultimately was all about Frank Lampard.
Yeah, Frank Lampard once again.
Started the move, finished the move.
Yeah, definitely. And it's quite a tidy little finish. And once again, a midfielder arriving that deeply in the box. You know, we just don't see many midfielders in that position.
But once he starts running with that girth, momentum just carries him through. He's like an oil tanker.
Yeah, he must also have strong calf muscles.
Oil tankers need 5 miles to stop. Yeah. I always find that mind-blowing.
It's very tough.
That's
very
what
tough
it's like
stop.
For the English Muffin. But 175 Premier League goals, midfielder, tying Thierry Henry, four, all that crap. What's amazing is the Manchester City fans started chanting, "Don't sell Frankie Lampard," their chant. Not quite understanding how loans from New York City FC to Manchester City actually work.
Yeah.
And after the game, Pellegrini, Frank wants to stay and we want to keep him. We must resolve the problem with New York City and the MLS. First of all, it's not the MLS.
Yeah, it's an MLS.
An MLS, Pellegrini. Yeah. But, Davo, I'm beginning
to... What do you think the chances are he's going to end up here in New York? I've got my season tickets, Rog. I'm all ready to go. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing Frank down at the Carolina Challenge Cup pre-season.
Well, in the third
down the end of February.
Yeah, I think there's as much chance of City sending Kun Aguero to start the season at NYCFC as sending Frank Lampard.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to believe Lamps is actually allergic to America.
Oh, my That's goodness.
Has MLS been like a fibrillator for Frank Lampard's career?
Uh-huh.
Or is the English Premier League the MLS's elephant's graveyard?
Are you saying that it's fear of MLS that is driving Frank Lampard?
Well, it could just be like...
He's an MLS-aphobe.
MLS is now so big and so good that just players that...
Oh, I can't make it over there.
Players that are done in MLS go to the English Premier League to play out the end of their career.
Yeah.
I did have an idea for Manchester City, David.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Manchester City, this is what you do. Find someone else called Frank Lampard, like an accountant or a plumber, and just send him to New York. MLS, we told you we would field a Frank Lampard. We just didn't tell you exactly which one it would be.
It's tough, though. Because there aren't even that many other
difference.
Franks in football. I mean, Sinclair, he's gone.
We'll work on it, David.
Yeah, we need other Franks.
Definitely. Other Frank Lampards, please report to the poop deck.
Yeah, very, very true. Burnley 1, Southampton 0. Rod, what have you done to this team?
Did I start filming too early?
Yeah, I think you did. The Saints skid continues. They fall to surging Burnley at Turf Moor. Claret's keeper Tom Heaton saved a 60th minute Dusan Tadic penalty. It was a fantastic save, actually, Rod. And Ashley Barnes hit home 30 minutes later to move Burnley out of the relegation zone. Rog, 15 points.
Amazing. I went to Southampton. Southampton have gone on a downward trajectory of four straight losses at Bananarama's. Tweeted, well, I like that, Bananarama.
Oh, we just did a Bananarama mention.
At Bananarama's tweeted this to say, Rog is like Mick Jagger at a World Cup. I think I should go and visit Chelsea, David. That'll make the season a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
This is an odd game, because Southampton do not miss penalties. If you think of one Premier League team that do not miss, David,
yeah,
do you not think of them?
Yeah, no, they're very, very good at converting penalties.
Matt Letizier.
Yeah.
Oh, Ricky Lambert. Southampton had scored 29 on the run when Dusan Tadic missed. He and Pele, they appear to be gasping for a Christmas break they will not receive in English football. Mm-hmm. Again, I'll say, everyone inside that club talks about beating their eighth place last season. They're dreaming of Europa League football, which is actually a nightmare, but they're dreaming of Europa League football, not the Champions League. We will see. Third win in six games for Burnley.
Yeah.
They're like a CONCACAF. If English Premier League had a CONCACAF Thunder team, that would be it.
Burnley, a CONCACAF Thunder. Lancashire's CONCACAF Thunder. I love it, Rog. Swansea, 1. Tottenham 2. Spurs now sniffing the top four after an 89th minute Christian Eriksen winner moved them into 7th in the table. 24 points, Rog, just 4 points out of 4th. The last time Swansea beat Tottenham was 1982, Rog.
So around the time I was making that New Year's resolution I mentioned at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen is the player everyone should be talking about that not enough people are talking about. But Spurs scored early and they scored late. And in a weekend of playing mediocrely and grabbing 3 points, this one in the rain was definitely up there. Harry Kane continued his wondrous run. At Brian HD May tweeted us to say, Harry Kane, he looks like what I imagined Haley Joe Osment would grow up to look like.
Yeah, good looking boy.
He is a good looking boy, but with Burnley and Leicester on the horizon for Spurs, might they even start lacing together a winning run, David?
Yeah, you never know, Rog. Sunderland 1, West Ham 1. Spanish midfielder Jordi Gomez put the home side ahead in the 22nd minute after a questionable penalty call that had Big Sam steaming. But Stuart Downing levelled the score just 7 minutes later, and absolutely no mention of Josie Altidore's miss.
Oh, his second straight game on the run for Josie starting. Only self-harming ensued. Paul Carr blew our mind by telling us Josie had just one touch in the box. I think that if there was just one, it was probably with his buttocks on that miss on the stroke of halftime. Uh-huh. If you didn't see it, don't watch it. Don't support cruelty by watching it as a vine.
Yeah.
Just don't. It's like 2 feet out, unmarked. The cross speeds over. You can see the panic in his mind. He has fight or flight. His mind freezes. His body takes over and did the logical thing. The only thing he could do in that situation, David.
Fall over.
Yeah. If only the ground. I've watched it a lot, actually, so that you don't have to. But if only the, like biblically, the ground would have cleaved open and he would have been swallowed whole. It would have made it perfect. Gus Poyet afterwards said, Josie was devastated. I've never seen him like that before. If he would have scored, you'd say to me, what a great decision to play him. But unfortunately, he didn't. I'm sure Gus has seen Josie sadder, David, don't you think?
Yeah, when?
I visited Josie.
Yeah.
Over the summer. It is a dark and twisted place that bloke has to live. I have to say, watching him miss, it was sadder to witness than seeing Wallace being killed in The Wire. Werder Bremen are rumoured to be in for him.
Oh.
He is a man who needs a fresh start. Please get a fresh
Bremen.
Start. I've got to say, there's such a polarisation when you type Josie into Twitter.
Yeah.
During a game.
Especially during a game, yeah.
English fans, not so kind.
They don't see the quality that we have seen in America with his performances for the national team.
US fans desperately want to believe.
Desperately want things to happen for Josie.
Yeah, so I have to say, Sunderland fans believe Josie couldn't finish a pie. He can. We've seen him for the US team. You said that if it was a CONCACAF field he was playing on, David, that ball would have jumped up and...
Oh, it would have gone in, Rog. It definitely would have taken a deflection up off a a piece of sod, and it would have, he would have been perfectly positioned. He just thought he was playing CONCACAF football.
He would have been the hero. If I said to you, you'll have a Premier League career, Davo, but you'll never score, would you take it?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
So courage, Josie. That is all I will say. 10th draw this season for Sunderland. 10th draw.
Yeah, they need points. They need 3 points, Rog. 1 point doesn't do them a lot of good. West Ham remain, Rog, in fourth place with that draw. In other games, James McArthur and Peter Crouch score in the 11th and 13th minutes, respectively, as Crystal Palace and Stoke draw 1-1. West Bromwich 1, Aston Villa 0. Craig Gardner scores against his former club to give the Baggies their first win since November 1st. And Everton 3, QPR 1. Everton wins at Goodison behind goals from Ross Barkley, Kevin Morales and the Scottish Messi, Stephen Naismith. You enjoyed that one, Rog?
Yeah, I'd say it was the least convincing 3-1 win of all time. Huh. Three huge, much-needed points. Ross Barkley stole all the plaudits. I think Robbie Musto got it in the net when he said on television that Barkley needs to go to a big club to really develop his skills. But the scoreline was deceptive. Everton just had one corner all game. Mohamed Besic was actually the man of the match, snuffing out every attack.
I thought he looked good. He looked great.
Yeah, with his iron will. You love crappily inked tattoos, eh?
Yeah, I love them.
QPR have lost all 8 Premier League away games this season, scoring just 3 goals. And that is the relegation for.
Interesting. But they're above Liverpool in the table, Rog.
The media always make a big deal of Everton coming over Liverpool. I couldn't care less.
Well, I'm the media in this case,
Rog. Unless they finish in the top four, it does not bother me.
Wow. Interesting. Are you still targeting top four for Everton this season?
Well, when we were in Brazil, we laughed when Roberto Martinez said that they were going to win the Europa League and we begged him to not do it. And it does seem like it's a march of folly. But it's such a deeply mediocre Premier League table this season, Dave. I'd say anything is possible.
Yeah, they're in the race for fourth, just 7 points out of fourth place right now, Rog. OK, the Champions League draw, Rog, happened this week. Champions League round of 16 is set. Manchester City head to the Catalan coast to play Barcelona for the second straight year. Chelsea face Zlatan's PSG. That'll be the second time these two teams meet in successive years, Rog. And Arsenal have drawn Monaco, a club Arsene Wenger used to manage.
Hot balls, David.
Yeah, hot balls.
By the way, City-Barcelona. Mm-hmm. I believe City are going to do this. PSG-Chelsea.
Wow.
I cannot wait. So Jose Mourinho claimed he wanted to face Paris because he said, quote, the journey to Paris is simple. David Luiz against
Saint
Diego
Pancras,
Costa.
Take the Le Channel. You're right there, like three
it's
hours.
It's such
Rog.
A battle royale between those two men.
Yeah,
you've got to believe Chelsea will win that, though.
Well, I mean, it's very, very close encounter last season. Fantastic games of football, actually, Rog. It's going to be a great last 16 draw.
I've been playing PSG as on FIFA a lot recently. I can tell you their weaknesses. Arsenal Monaco just seems to be a chance for every journalist to dust off vintage photographs of young Arsene Wenger smoking away on the Monaco sideline when he managed there in the late 80s. You'll want to know about the Europa League, of course.
Everton, oh, absolutely, Rog.
Everton play Young Boys Bern.
Oh, excellent.
It just seemed a team for whom the headlines obviously just write themselves.
Yep.
At Bradley Lass says, Young Boys versus Everton sounds like a bad early 90s cable movie with Macaulay Culkin and that guy for Mr. Belvedere.
Yeah.
Let's hope so. That's got the Europa League written all over it, Davey.
Yeah. Everton get demolished by Young Boys. That's not the headline that you really want, Rog. We want to congratulate the winner of our Landon Donovan custom Xbox competition, Rog. In honour of St. Landon's last game, we partnered with the GFOPs at EA Sports to give away the gaming console, which is one of only 8 in the world.
We had an unbelievable amount of entries. Yeah. We're actually going to give away 4 prizes. There were so many beautiful entries. JJ Manento, reimagine Landon Donovan as the Cakes Awakens, a gorgeous Star Wars film poster that says, no drinking fountains were harmed in the making of this movie. Thomas Jeanson, who looks like he's about 7 years of age, did a gorgeous poster, Super Sensation, which I would like for my bedroom wall if my missus would let me. And Carl Herman, and unbelievably gorgeous. It's like almost like a beautiful book cover from the 1950s, All Quiet on the Western Coast. All 3 of you will get FIFA 15 of your console choice. But the winner, Dave, was absolutely breathtaking.
Wolsey of Brooklyn, Rog.
What a talented man. He wrote a poem and a piece of art, and he said, Landon Donovan is the American version of English warrior poet Siegfried Sassoon. Huh. He's a man of incredible talent, crippling self-awareness, befuddling contradiction, who lived through grotesque struggles that are unfathomable to modern sensibilities. He compares trench warfare to 1990s US soccer. And his piece of art is a modification of Christopher Nevinson's famous painting, French Troops Resting. He says it calls to mind the horrors and melancholy of both the First World War and the 1998 World Cup. We will post all the winners on meninblazers.com, but it's absolutely exquisite. Really, really remarkable work. Well done, Matthew.
Brilliant. Okay, Rog, on to the Ravens. Our first Raven from Jeremy Lance. Hello, men. I was tooling around on Instagram today. I popped over to the Men in Blazers page and started flipping through the photos. I was wasting time while watching a Lifetime movie with my wife. I noticed that you guys are always dressed up. Every photo you have, at minimum, a button-down shirt and a sports coat. Many show you with a tie. Do you guys ever dress down? Do you sit around your house in a blazer? Do T-shirts exist in your wardrobe? Is this a British thing to always dress up that much for day-to-day activities?
It's a great question, David.
I think there is actually a shot of us on the beach where I'm not wearing a shirt and you're not wearing that much, Rog. So it's not everything on our Instagram is tie and blazer, Rog.
That's one out of 220 photographs.
Yeah. We are called the Men in Blazers, Rog.
Yeah, we're on brand. I'd say I wore a lot of T-shirts into my mid-30s, mostly tuxedo T-shirts, until my wife took me aside and just informed me that she thought it was a good time for me to maybe think about moving on.
Yeah.
I've still got them all in the drawer that I never opened. It's a dozen XFL jerseys with the New York, New Jersey Hitmen on, which I always found just wonderful. But I've always loved Jules Holland. There's an amazing, one of my favourite television shows. Do you ever watch Later with Jules Holland?
Oh, it's a brilliant show. You know Jules Holland from my neck of the woods? He's from Greenwich, Rog, from just down the hill.
It's on a channel I've never watched before called Ovation.
Yeah.
You familiar with that
channel?
Yeah,
it's a brilliant channel.
And he's such a dapper gentleman. So watching him around the time I was banned from T-shirts, I've morphed into a gentleman that almost always does wear a jacket. I feel naked without one, David.
Yeah.
And I guess at the weekend, I wear moleskins more than corduroys now for this winter. First time in a long time. I've got three pairs of Masons that I picked up at the same time that are gorgeous. But you're a gentleman that likes to dress down.
Yeah, I'll dress down. I get home of an evening, Rog, and I'm like sweatpants. I go straight into my closet, change into my sweatpants, put on a T-shirt, maybe in the winter a little sweater over the T-shirt.
John Smedley's.
Yeah, and I love my Smedley's, and I'm very happy.
Do you pad around? I imagine you in a pair of tracksuits that say pink in large letters on your buttocks.
No, I don't have those. I don't have those.
A picture.
Yeah, Juicy Couture.
Yeah.
I don't have those.
Some velour. What's your position on velour?
I don't own any velour, so I don't really have a position on it, other than I don't own it. I don't own it. No, amazing. I like sweatpants. I like just getting into my sweats. I sort of feel, for me, I can either do super casual or I can do super smart. It's the whole middle that I struggle with. Just regular dressing. I've been trying it recently, just working on it a little bit. Just like,
give me an example.
Well, what I'm wearing right now, I'm wearing not wearing a blazer, I'm wearing a vest. I'm wearing a sweater with a T-shirt, by the way, Rog. This
God
is a T-shirt.
Damn.
And I'm wearing jeans and I'm wearing a pair of boots. I'm no blazer on today, Rog.
I'd rather wear a chest wig than a T-shirt, David.
Oh, I like it. These are good T-shirts. Really nice.
It's a good chest
from
wig.
Stephen Allen. Yeah, it's good. Underneath the T-shirt is a chest wig. Okay, Rog, the winner of our coveted Guinness Men in Blazers poet, philosopher, soccer, scribe, Raven of the Week is Alex Wallenitz from Brooklyn. Very good day for Brooklyn, Rog, on Men in Blazers. This is a long one, Rog, so buckle in. Dear Rog and Davo, born and raised in New York, I was never much of a sports fan, encumbered with asthma, huskiness, and a Jewish mother. I abstained from recreational sports. After the 2010 World Cup, I developed a new love for soccer. As I learned more about the EPL teams, I found myself drawn to Tottenham Hotspur. The north part of England's major city, filled with immigrants and Jews, seemed to be the emotional equivalent of my ancestral Bronx. A fandom based off a love of teams that succeeded in the past and should be better, but never are, felt like the English Knicks. When news broke about NYCFC, I was excited. I love MLS and had tried to become a fan of New York Red Bulls, but never felt connected, feeling like I had missed the boat already. Perhaps it was my burgeoning love of Spurs preventing an embrace of former Arsenal man Thierry Henry. NYCFC seemed like the opportunity to start at the beginning with everybody else. I contemplated getting season tickets, but New York City FC's reveal of their kits sucked away my enthusiasm. Suddenly, I felt like I was being asked to root for Manchester City. Suddenly, I wondered if the English muffin was ever coming at all, and if this team was not New York's at all, but a means for Man City absconding fair play rules. The more New York black and orange alternate kit did little to assuage my fears. I know it's just a jersey. It's still a blue. Though Spurs and Manchester City aren't true rivals, but somehow I feel more connected to a sports team from a country I only studied abroad in for a few months and from a neighbourhood I visited only twice, a team I've never seen live, are rather crap and have only followed for 3 years. Am I crazy for worrying about this? NYCFC is my local team, playing in the house that Jeter built, but I find my love for Spurs, as bad as they are, getting in the way. What do I do, gents? Courage, Alex. Interesting question. And as a NYCFC season ticket holder, Rog, very excited for their premier season. I've thought about this question when I saw the shirt, and it does, for all intents and purposes, Rog, look like a Manchester City shirt. I've immediately decided to have a shirt made. I'm going to take a Chelsea shirt, and I'm going to fuse it with an NYCFC shirt and create a way for me to always wear my Chelsea fandom along with my NYCFC shirt as well.
It's brilliant. I do think this is going to be... The launch of NYCFC is going to be one of the most fascinating stories in American soccer in the next year.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we know our country has become a major target for Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
City have lagged. I mean, they're brand building. They're playing catch-up with the United, the Chelseas, the Arsenals. They're trying to be unbelievably creative in their approach, which I really laud. But that creativity... it needs to be fully thought through, David. Mm-hmm. And I had the same reaction, that the jersey was just a massive missed opportunity when I saw it. Not just for Americans who've developed real ties to other teams that shouldn't be kind of like disparaged.
Yeah.
But it's also, there's a massive market. I met a guy in Orlando who sells $5 million worth of MLS jerseys to Chinese and English tourists when they go to Disneyland. They want something that says Orlando on it in a soccer framework. They buy Orlando City jerseys. They're not going to buy Manchester City-looking jerseys with New York on. I mean, if you're not going to walk around England in a New York City FC.
You're right.
You might have done if it was slightly different, if it had kind of bars on it, or it just looked very, very different.
Yeah.
I will say Manchester City are a very strategic club. When they do something, they do things unbelievably well. And I have to believe, David, I think they'll get their head around the Frank Lampard situation. I think they will bail themselves out of that. But this seemed like a very odd first note, Dave, and we will see.
It is a high-class problem for them, the former Frank Lampard, though, Rog. It's a high-class problem to have a player playing so well. Remember the knock on Frank Lampard when the, you know, many journalists, respected American soccer journalists, when it was announced that Lampard was coming, they were a little bit underwhelmed, like thinking, oh, it's a has-been, it's the end of his career, he's no good anymore. And I think the fact that he is proving that he's that good is ultimately very good for MLS.
I mean,
ultimately,
Man City know better than anyone that winning the league and the fortune that brings with you are the best thing possible for a foot-forward brand. Alex, maybe the ultimate solution for you is to become a New York Cosmos fan.
Yeah, good idea. Very good idea.
I met Raul yesterday for the first time. He's a lovely, lovely bloke.
Playing out there on Long Island, at Hofstra, I believe.
Maybe Man City should sign him.
Yeah, we will see. Our guest today, Rog, one of the people leading the digital revolution, but reinventing how people consume media can be difficult when your Premier League club is devoid of a defensive midfielder. We welcome to the pod BuzzFeed Motion Pictures Vice President, Arsenal supporter, my mate, Jonathan Perlman.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing very, very well. Thank God that it's this week we're talking to you after a good Arsenal performance and a nice Arsenal victory.
Yeah, I mean, had this been last week, I probably would have been unavailable. so this is good timing.
You're a very smart man, Jonathan. You Google, you're Cory Booker'd, you're now working at BuzzFeed. Why Arsenal?
You know, supporting the best football club in the history of the world is an obvious decision. how I came to that, actually, was I lived for a bit while in university in London, worked for a member of parliament who he himself was a Millwall fan.
Wow.
Yes, we will leave that alone.
Clive Efford.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very, very good. But Clive's, the people around Clive, including my good friend Bill Haddock, is an Arsenal supporter. He represented a constituency in southeast London that was not far from Woolwich, the original home of Arsenal. And so I was indoctrinated in probably 2000, 2001 to be a Gooner, having always been a huge soccer fan, played myself for many years, watched it as a child. There was 1 hour of television on Saturday morning on Sports Channel of highlights from the EPL. Had always been a fan, never had a team. Then I became a Gooner.
That's good. By that definition, being from southeast London, very near to Woolwich, Arsenal myself, I should really be a Gooner. And yet I've grown up loathing them, Jonathan.
You're a fellow at the Centre for the Digital Future. Future, future. At the USC Annenberg School. I mean, we've talked a lot on this show. Baseball thrived in the golden era of radio. The NFL boom once television took over. And a lot of us are betting that soccer's rise has been tied to its positioning as a perfect global digital sport. Do you believe that?
I certainly believe it, and I think you're actually seeing this come true. I mean, if you look at Twitter, for example, the times when there are the most amount of tweets, you know, the World Cup obviously comes to mind, European Championships. It's soccer is a game that has obviously a global audience, and this is really the first time that that audience is able to really connect and discuss and debate and argue and love everything that's happening. Soccer is a perfect game for the rise of social media, and it's coming together in this country, in the U.S., at a perfect time where there's now exposure to different leagues, different teams, and you're seeing this in engagement that people are having with the sport.
Do you now feel a fraternity with Arsenal fans all around the world digitally as Arsenal are playing football?
I mean, I will watch a game with my phone in hand on Twitter while I'm watching the game. And my Twitter feed is filled with Arsenal supporters from around the world, as well as you lot, who aren't yet Arsenal supporters, but hopefully one day will be. And what you're seeing is that you can actually interact in real time. And so it could be somebody in Indonesia who's, you know, it's the middle of the night and it's first thing in the morning for me, and yet I'm seeing what they're saying about the way Giroud is playing or about the way, the midfield is or is not coming together. You've never been able to do this before, and yet it's coming just, again, at this perfect time where the rise of soccer in this country is being met with people and exposure all around the world.
We've spent a lot of time with Premier League clubs seeking to crack America. One of my favourite quotes of yours is, "Content is king, but distribution is queen, and she wears the pants." You also spend a lot of time interacting with many football clubs. You must watch and consume a lot of their content and their brand-building efforts. What advice would you give these clubs, the Arsenals, the Chelseas, the Uniteds, in terms of their brand-building efforts to differentiate themselves from the pack?
Yeah, there's just a tremendous opportunity right now in the U.S. to create fan bases. I mean, I have people come up to me who know I'm a football fan and say, which team should I support? And I obviously say Arsenal, but there is this opportunity right now. If these clubs can create content that people ultimately want to engage with and then share with their friend, when a friend shares something with you, there's an implied endorsement. Right, and this is what you see, what all the big brands are trying to get involved with. And this is what football clubs can do. If they do it right, they can build their brand and build huge loyalty in the U.S. and, frankly, around the world.
What emotional connectivity or what emotional vacuum is European soccer playing for intelligent American-born and bred people such as yourself right now?
You know, I think it's actually a generational thing. I mean, I look at my father who never played soccer, but I did as a child, and now my children are as well. So I think there's actually a generational change that we're starting to see. And you know, it's you can see it in the performance of the national team over time, the growth of the MLS. It's that soccer is, has played a role in more and more people's lives, young people who are now not as young as they used to be. And listen, this is this country obviously loves American football. I have a belief that, that American football has peaked in it. It could start to erode, could take 20, 30, 40 years. But changing demographics, obviously increasing amounts of Latinos in this country who have been brought up playing soccer, and people like me, frankly, who have played since a young age, who are who love the game, who are now interested in watching it whenever we can get it, and watching it at the highest levels from Europe is something that we will carve out a couple hours of our day to do.
A tweet from a listener, at A. Rodriguez, says, Jonathan, every Arsenal fan has a way to deal with the grief. What's your favourite way?
I will actually simply ignore it. After a tough loss, I should say, you know, listen, last week, two wins, both 4-1, it was actually a very, very good week. When we have bad weeks and we've had more than our fair share, I will turn it off and I will not, I won't turn off the game. I'll watch the whole game, but I won't read endless copious amounts of information about it. I will move on with my life and then come 2, 3, maybe 4 days later, I will start picking things up again. So my way of dealing with the grief is to ignore.
And where do you stand? Repression. Where do you stand on the Wenger question, Jonathan? Is he the right man for the job? Are you solidly behind the Frenchman?
I am behind him. I wouldn't say solidly behind him. I think he has obviously a long track record. Listen, if you're winning games, people will be behind you. If you're losing, they'll be against you. I think he the injuries that the team is has are obviously making some formations a little bit different. I think what we saw going forward last weekend was a very positive start. I think if we have a nice win over Liverpool this weekend, people will calm down. If not, they'll rise up again. So if you're winning, I'm supportive of him. If it turns out the season does not end where we want it to, I would thank him for his service. Maybe one of the greatest managers in history, but maybe time to move on.
Yeah. Get an Alan Pardew. Jonathan, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. Good luck with everything over at BuzzFeed. We will be consuming and communicating all of your content.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah. Thanks, guys. You're the best.
What a bloke, Dave.
Yes, good man.
Yes, not our man of the year, though.
No.
We put together a quick list of men of the year for 2014.
Yeah.
We both agreed there could be only one winner.
Yeah.
Third place?
Yeah.
Manuel Neuer?
Oh, it's good.
Player so dominant, he's developed weekly ways to ensure a vine reflecting his superiority and general contempt goes viral.
Yeah, very well done.
Number two, Davo.
Uh-huh.
Who do we have as number two? Alexi Lalas.
Wow.
Move to Fox.
Big news. He's massive. Got Fox attitude, Roger. He's got Fox attitude.
He's got Foxitude. And I guess going, he's now gone into the booth where he's going to watch the women win World Cup 2015.
Yeah.
And then he'll be in the studio when the US win the World Cup in 2018 and then defend it in 2022.
Perfectly appropriate, Roger.
Good move, Lexi. You said, Davo, there could only be one winner. 2014's Man of the Year.
Oh, the man who stole the World Cup, Rog. Miguel Herrera. Wet, dry, angry, sad. It was Miguel Herrera's world this year, Rog.
Yeah, a man whose passion trumped even our own, I'd say, Davo. And today it was announced he became the US's most Googled GIF of 2014.
That is amazing.
Sport the future.
That is amazing, Rog. Okay, your weekend looks like this, Rog. Manchester City versus Crystal Palace, 7:45 a.m. on Saturday. Newcastle versus Sunderland, 8:30 a.m. on Sunday. And Liverpool versus Arsenal, that's 11 a.m. on Sunday. Huge game, Rog. Dave, all games on NBC.
We're about to enter a period when there's 40 Premier League games in 13 days.
That's a lot of football.
It's wonderful for football fans. Not so great for footballers or for good football.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Very true.
Majority of European leagues actually take a break for refueling, for reorganisation, for re-energising.
For caroling.
But not the English. We'll run our players into the ground. The goals will fly in. There will be some 7-1s and it will be deliriously bonkers.
Looking forward to it though, Rog. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page and MIB gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating this podcast. What are you putting in the Emporium this week?
Oh, gorgeous book.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through it. Engels, England by Matthew Engel.
Yeah.
You may know him from The Guardian. You may know him from the Financial Times.
Yeah.
The book subtitle is 39 English Counties, One Capital and One Man. Mm-hmm. He walked the length and breadth of the country over the course of 3 years. And he loves Britain. He clearly loves Britain. But he finds it hard to escape a sense of melancholy that kind of seeps through as he discovers it along the way. It's a fascinating portrait if you are as interested in the country as, well, you are, David.
Yeah, definitely. Talking about interested in countries, Rog, a brand new edition of one of my favourite books. Every household should have one, Rog. I'm putting in the Times Comprehensive Atlas of the World. This is a new edition, Rog. Tom Robbins is the named author, but the entire Times editorial staff work on this. It's a beautiful book. I know in the world of, in an age of Google Maps, you'd think you don't need an atlas around the house, but it's wonderful to have an atlas just to see where your teams are going to be playing in the Europa League, perhaps, Rog, where your latest signing is coming from.
Where Bournemouth is.
Yeah, exactly. Where exactly is Bournemouth?
That's where
it's
it
somewhere
is.
Somewhere in the future. Other ways to connect to us, meninblazers.wikispaces.com/Rog. That's a wonder of the modern world. Great way for new listeners to figure out who we are. You can always go to our website. It's meninblazers.com. Sign up for our newsletter there, Rog. Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers. Our Instagram, Men in Blazers. We've got a Facebook, Rog. We love our Facebook. We love reading all of your messages there. We've got a subreddit maintained by GFOP Akshay. That's at reddit.com/r/meninblazers. And you can email us always at meninblazers@gmail.com. It's got a little milder, Rog. The Ravens are still making their way to the crap part.
We love
Soho.
Each and every one.
Vendorpunk, Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Size the year 2015.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight America. Love you, GFOPs. Thank you for a gorgeous year. And I love you, Dave.
I love you, GFOPs too. Love you, Rog.